I'm looking to dry on this motherfucker.
Some people are still a little drowsy, some people a little tipsy, some people are de all of us are definitely tired.
We
This is
ain't
the
tipsy
mail.
over here no more.
Hey, you didn't have to out yourself. I didn't say nobody's name. You didn't have to out yourself. This is the Books and Be Mail Book Club, Books and Beyond. We are reading The Psychology of Money, a book by Morgan Housley. As we're going over chapters 1 through 5. I know some of you guys are probably watching this thinking, hey, weren't you guys reading the Coach Prime book? Yes, we were. We gave our explanation in the last review. Check it out. And with that shameless plug, I'll tell you to go check out the YouTube channel, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, the whole nine yards. We're even on TikTok now. TikTok now for some strange reason. So we'll send that there. There was an introduction to this book, but let's just start off with our basic feel of the book. The first five chapters, what are you feeling, JB?
I don't know, man. I don't know how to describe what I'm feeling. I mean, I get where he coming from overall. I don't want to say I don't like it because I understand it. I just think that there's a part of it missing, and I guess I can explain that.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
So, like, for me particularly, like when he talking about, and we'll kind of get to a piece of it, but he was talking about like how everybody in their different stages and everything. And like, I think that when he get to the investor part, it's like a either like there's so many different facets to all of it that I think it's really hard to actually describe it all, right? So like, you're either gonna say like you're doing a good job or you're doing a bad job, but there's like so many different facets in the middle. So it's gonna be interesting to see where he continues to go with it.
Black, what's your thoughts on it, on the book up?
Okay, it's okay so far. It's like a build up. I feel like he's like building it up to where he really want to get to.
Just so you know, Black, we can only see like your nose and up.
I know. I see it on the camera.
Okay, so
The
you
women, all the women complaining. We are talking about books. Tell them don't be doing all that on here.
my bad for the disrespect. All right. I think I might be in the same category or the same timeline. Like I will say definitively so far, I like this book. It does come with a sense of energy, and there's a certain level of relatability about this book. So I guess we'll go into I'll say that I find it more interesting than the last book that we're reading for sure. I think it speaks more to me. In the intro of this, he immediately talks about the book being the name of the book is The Psychology of Money, and behavior is hard to teach. I'm a firm believer that, pain is one of the best teachers ever. And when I got to college, one of the sayings one of my college football coaches used to say is, there's two types of regret of what is it?
The pain of regret or the regret of discipline.
Something along the lines, whether you can have pain from regret from pain or regret because of your lack of
Discipline.
discipline. And it always resonated with me. It always like kind of stayed in the back of my mind. So like immediately people who have, I feel, a structure or people who rely on structures, or people want to develop or kind of gauge structures, this should speak to you. The soft skills versus the technical, you can actually understand the algorithm of money. Like we have computer programs now that do trading for people, and you could become one of those people who make pennies on the dime, and you just penny, nickel and dime your way up to the $1 million bracket, or you could just understand the psychology of money and get people to give it to you versus you trying to find You're having so those are two fascinating takes in the intro immediately, and then the history and then he closed it off with the introduction saying history doesn't repeat itself, humans do, and that one like kind of like that hooked me. That was where it hooked me. I was like, damn, okay, he's speaking sense. What it was, what, anything about those statements or something in the intro that made you take pause?
Well, I like that history don't repeat itself, but humans do. But it's also due to lack of knowledge of your past. A lot of people don't be like they don't be caring about what happened in the past, so then it happens to them. Just like when you're a kid, motherfucker tell you what they're not what not to do, and just because you ain't experienced, you just blowing them off. Like yeah, I was young too, so and I've been through that. So this like the type of route you should take. Like no, I'm gonna do it my way. You don't really know what you're talking about or whatever. And then you go through it and you're like, damn, but. Nobody likes to fucking learn from nobody else's mistake. Well, most people don't. I love it. I ain't doing shit I saw somebody else fuck up on in the same way that they did it.
No, for sure.
Yeah, man. And in that same breath, he also said like, it's some stuff you just can't learn without fucking up yourself. Essentially, like
But
you
that's just
just you're just not gonna learn it,
yeah, but that's just certain
or
that's just
experiencing it. It's
yeah.
not even messing it up. It's just experience.
Yeah, experience is different, but that's like just that's what people tell themselves when they fuck up out somebody tell them not to do it. Like you just gotta learn for yourself. No, you just gotta just listen.
Nah,
A
yeah.
lot of people just don't want to listen, but sometimes you don't have that guidance, so.
No, I totally agree with that. And then you could even take it a step further and say like something that kind of rang out to me, a movie that I really loved last year was Into the Spider-Verse, and the theme of that book, that story is not letting people dictate your future. Like his classic line is like, "No, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it my way." And for all you guys that I don't know, can I? Is it too early to do a spoiler? Anyway, just for
Nah,
spoiler,
come
if you
on, man. That
haven't seen,
movie
that was a
12
year
years
ago.
ago. Everybody didn't watch that.
Yeah, that movie, it was great. If you haven't
You
seen,
just go see it. You go see
spoiler
it.
basically is
Yeah. And
something
if you ain't
terrible's gonna
seen it,
happen to his family mem one of his family members, and he feels he has the power to change it. But it kind of goes, it kind of attacks you as the viewer because we all know Spider-Man's story, which is someone he loves dies, and it causes him to learn with great power comes great responsibility. That technically didn't happen to Miles Morales. It happened in a different variant, but it wasn't deemed enough to be a Spider-Man origin story. So it talks about like what that means, and just to hear that like you have to go through these trials and tribulations. I felt a lot of that in this book and in the beginning chapters. He talks about the things that you need to qualify or the things you need to get rich versus staying rich. We'll talk about that in chapter 5, but just a lot of that like what are the things that you understand versus what are the things that I understand about money and how do we look at them? Like fascinating take on it, honestly. Fascinating take. So we'll look into
Yeah,
that.
and
Go
he
ahead.
knew all these, and he was just talking about how new all these concepts are.
Very, yeah, I that part kind of did catch me off guard too. Like, yeah, let's just get into it. Chapter 1. No one is crazy. Literally a great chapter. 401k starting in 1970 and Roth IRA starting in 1980. Like
Right.
I'm only 8 years older than the Roth. Like even if I
Yeah.
wanted to start, even if I started as a kid, I'd only have 35 years on it. And that's crazy.
So I mean, when I was reading that and kind of listening to that, and I kind of paused it, right? Like, because so that's a very multi-layered like thought there. Because one, you think about like me personally, like why I got into like retirement planning and like trying to work with it is just seeing so many older people still in the working class, right? And like conversation among many of our generation, many millennials, right? And so on and so forth. Like, man, I ain't working past 50. I ain't working past, like actual job, or I'm gonna retire early. But like those concepts weren't even a thing when the prior generation was our age. Like,
And then when that's that for the shit first started, who was gonna be the first to do it?
Right, that's it wasn't the question. Black people.
Yeah,
that was so that's like, why yeah, no. It's multi-layered.
Yeah, like man, look, I ain't about to be the first motherfucker to be in on that.
You said put all my money in there? Nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, I'm good. My mom be like, I don't want to put nothing in. We only making $10 a week. Yeah. You know what I mean? They making $80 a week. They got like, all right, nah. You remember on Fences? He like, I want to borrow $10 until you get paid next week. Like, come on, man. I just came home. I gave the money to your mama, and you want to come borrow? Like. Man, I'm gonna give it back, Dad. I'm only at... But the motherfuckers that's begging for money always act like it's not that much of an inconvenience to you.
Right.
Like, I'm only trying to get it for a couple of days. Like, nigga.
It's just $20. Like,
yeah. That's
like, if it's just $20, why you asking me?
That's what he told him. Like, man, if it's just $20, you.
Why are you man, in this predicament? Why are we in this predicament talking about $20?
That's how I like beat up.
Yeah. You really do.
So black people ain't gonna be the ones to look into stuff like this.
But I think and I think that's the wild part because we are responsible for a lot of the culture, but we're not responsible for a lot of the important like life changing decisions that we should be. As much as we hold in the dollar and as much as we hold in the culture, you would think we would own a lot more. Of everything. So it's interesting. Let's start off at the top of chapter one. It talks about experience of money and how experiences of money can be appreciated or perceived differently. It talks about how JFK was someone who didn't experience the recession. He didn't understand it, and this was something that made people at the time who were trying to elect him to office feel like he was probably inadequate because he didn't have a firm understanding of what it was like to struggle. But I was, and this is when it dawned on me. Fear is something that needs to be experienced. But then how come we have people who are afraid of the folktale? Like, is the folk like what is it about fear that some fear needs to be experienced and then other fears you can hear about and you're like, I ain't doing that. That was the thing that came to me immediately. Like, he never experienced the fear of being poor, but I felt we understand innately what it means to be poor, right.
What's some fears that you have to see for yourself?
A fear that I think you have to see for yourself is like figuring out if you're afraid of heights. Like, you have to experience that to know that, oh shit, I am afraid of heights.
And where do you go to experience that?
I feel like you could be standing over a balcony, a three-story balcony, being like, I don't like being up here. I'm a little uncomfortable.
I would just say, don't go to the balcony.
Okay, but that's you asked me how to discover the
fear. I'm just saying like I know you like. You got to experience certain stuff, but certain stuff you just don't have to do. Like that dude was talking about, it was a pod. Dude was like, yeah, like black people don't really know how to swim. Like everybody should know how to swim. He's like, why? Like, what if you end up in a body of water? Like, what scenario would I just end up in a body of water and have to get out? He's like, yeah, if you want a boat, I'm like, I just wouldn't go on a boat. He was like, there's no reason that I would be in that type of scenario because I just wouldn't be around those type of things.
Okay, we could talk about we know that there are phobias, like people who are afraid of spiders, afraid of so we know like people have experienced fear versus fears that we're told of. Like if someone like when you telling kids about like
I guess when you asking that question, like we talking about the president of the United States, so people don't really want you to like they want you to really understand like where you coming from. I don't need you to really fear it, but like I don't need you to really experience it.
I know it's a lot of stuff that most of our presidents ain't experienced, especially involved our life, like that happened in our life.
You don't have to technically like fully experience it, but you do have to take your time to like educate yourself on something, right? Like to understand something if I'm going to govern it properly. That's part of the reason why Illinois is governed so differently, or states like Georgia or like California, because you got big cities and then you got like a million small towns. And like you that's why it's like completely two polar opposites outside of like, you know, all the other stuff.
The last 10 presidents, who was poor other than who experienced a poor other than like a little bit of Obama?
Last 10? Shit, I don't know.
The last 10?
Well, I say 10 because, you know, he was almost 40.
if we were allowed to go back, I think Teddy had a rough bringing. Whoever one was who ended up in the wheelchair, Carter was poor. Carter was poor. Yeah, that's a great call out in chat. Carter was he didn't grow like, but I get your point. Experience over fear is not an equivalent race, and I guess maybe I thought a little bit too much into it. Hey Mike, relax all that laughing. It's not the motherfucking black calling me old and shit. He 2 years behind me. He right on. He's second place.
That's a long time, bro.
It's a long time.
700 some days.
So I definitely yield to y'all's position. Y'all's position on this is actually pretty unique, and the fact that you don't have to be something you just to, in order to experience it. I like that.
I think fear comes from experience though, because like unless they got a phobia that came from their mind, most of the time they fucking seen a spider in person, now they fucking terrified of them. Well, you
a lot of times fear. Other times fear comes from the unknown, so shit. Yeah. Like, I'm probably more fearful of it than you are because I ain't never seen it.
Then let's talk a little bit about the, and then this is another interesting thing. When they were talking about money and they talked a little bit about sweatshops. How old is this dude? Because for the longest, I thought this book was older than it was. Then they brought up something that happened very recently. So I was like, man, this book isn't that old. But he talks about the prostitute versus the sweatshop and how people, once again, our perception of something is not which should be the standard. In America, in the West, if you told me you worked at a sweatshop, we would immediately feel bad for you. We would try and find ways to help you. We would try and there'd be people literally marching in the streets for you. But this could that literally you working at the sweatshop is an upgrade from you being a prostitute. Now, I think there can be an overall conversation about like what's a livable wage, but a perception of what it means to struggle. We as all us as a collective group of people do not have a firm understanding of what is a struggle, depending on where you are and who you are. Any thoughts on that,
hero?
Huh?
So who you said don't have a collective as a collective group don't have that?
I think
that's what he was saying.
People in the West versus people across in other parts of the world.
So you look at it in a different eye. So, like, you know how people be talking about when you have food, you're like, yes, kids starving out, but that don't have nothing to do with my pain and struggle here. You have your own struggle here, and they have their own separate struggle there.
Yeah.
It don't make that struggle greater because you're not experiencing that shit. Mm-hmm. So, like, we struggling. We have our own struggles as far as, you know, life, and they have theirs as far as life. Because there's still places over there that don't even have, like, real electricity. But us, no, for sure.
No, for sure.
Any slight change of life can feel like that for us. That's why motherfuckers be in high school stressed out and depressed because they phone broke. they don't even give a fuck about phones in certain places. But these motherfucking kids about to kill themselves because they can't text their friends.
Uncle Black, given the facts. The thing that I use here for perspective is just like what I would perceive as a struggle. And seeing as I like, you know, I used to live when I was overseas, I wanted to go see Graham. I had to go to the village. They ain't have no running water and shit like that. So I had to experience that. So another thing that they talk about is the lottery ticket versus the safety net. So I'm skewing the numbers here, but I believe most Americans can't afford it. Like if something happened today, like right now, and you needed to come up with $500 in order to resolve the issue. They're saying, you know, a vast majority, about 60% of Americans can't do that right now. But the average American who makes less than, I think, $100,000 spends $400 on lottery tickets. And this speaks to the psychology about it. And I think
throughout the year.
Yeah. Throughout the year, yeah.
So
I think it was less than 100,000 though.
Less than 100,000?
Yeah. I got a coworker that's spending like 400 every couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, he was specifically talking about people that was more so in the kind of poverty line.
It made me think about, like, when I go to Vegas, how annoying I must be to, like, regulars to come in and win at blackjack tables and come in and win at craps and come in and win at poker tables.
Because it depends on the person, though, because the real regular gamblers, they do it for a living.
Yeah.
And they decent. You gambling and lottery is a little different.
I had an experience with like a real regular gambler, like, and we won a lot of money.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
It's the casuals of anything that get the most downfalls.
That the downfalls.
Just like on the video game, if you're a casual Call of Duty player, only way you win is if you play with some pros or you get lucky and get into a stream where it's a bunch of sucky ass kids that just got the system.
If you mash enough, you'll win one.
Not on Warzone. You can mash.
Oh, not on Warzone. No. Warzone. Warzone. You're gonna be camped out. You're gonna be in the corner waiting for everybody to be fighting third party. You're gonna be a rat. You got to be
I'm the dude that's going to let you... I suck. So I'm the dude that lets you know where other people coming from. Because I'm going to run out, get smoked. He shot me from the side.
You're a real one. You're the anchor. You're the real one. You're the anchor.
And 20 deaths.
I'm going to get some kills, though.
Now, Black got like 10,000 damage. Yeah. Black got 10,000 damage, 2 kills.
And I'll be beating the shit out of motherfuckers with the bus stop.
I got a few kids out there.
That's what's up.
But I don't claim to be good. Just like on 2K, if you're a casual and you get on there against these fucking pro ass niggas that want to dribble sideways.
That's crazy.
They made me stop buying 2K 3 years ago.
Cause they live it and you don't live it, so you be like, you know, it ain't that serious for us.
You're like, man.
I play games for enjoyment. I ain't about to be awkward.
I'm getting mad. You pulling up from half court. I need to stop playing.
Yeah. Anything else in chapter one, or are we pushing to chapter two?
No, but the overall title was that, what was it? No One's Crazy.
No One's Crazy.
I like that, though. I like that the way he looks at it is everybody have their own experience. And, like, people try to call other motherfuckers out because of where they are in life versus understanding where another motherfucker is and how skeptical people can be.
Yeah. For sure. Chapter two, shout out to Scott Galloway. If you don't know who Scott Galloway is, he's a NYC economic professor. Before I started getting into the stock market, I used to follow his talks almost religiously. He's sort of a douchebag, but he's like the best type. He's like the tough love type guy. But he speaks to our generation and he talks about savings and things like that. And he has a YouTube page. Definitely go check him out. Look him up. If you can, listen to some of his lectures. Scott Galloway, who was mentioned at the top of chapter two. Fascinating person with a great boat of insight. But this chapter is labeled Luck and Risk. And shout out to JB who made fun of me last week because I didn't name the titles for the chapters. So I'm doing that for you now, JB. I got you.
Hey, I got you. It helped me compartmentalize. That's how
I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve.
I appreciate it.
We talk a little bit about Bill Gates. And the question is, was Bill Gates lucky or was something else in play? And I can immediately say Bill Gates was not fucking lucky.
I was thinking the same damn thing.
I was thinking that kind of the whole time. But I will say, like, if you take it to that extreme, like maybe I wouldn't be into fucking computers, but I might be into, you know, something else.
Yeah, because I took it a step further. I took it a step further because, and I don't know if this person, if it was being disingenuous or he just didn't know. But when you look at that, not only that high school, but there was four other districts in the following 2 years that followed the motto of the last school after their students came to the to their school to experience this computer. Within the 4 years, all the high school, major high schools had one of those computers there.
But so, this is what I was thinking, though. Like, how they get the three smartest people in the world at the same school? Because that's what
No. I don't think you got the smartest people. I think you got you had a bunch of people with potential. It was just these people's potential came up. Because if you go 4 miles out and you scour the people's population for retirement age versus their financial stake, they have a 20 to 30% increase in financial gains higher than the national average in the United States. So it was just if you're going to say it was luck, it's just the probability. Huh? No, I don't think it was luck. I think it was more so.
Probability and luck is the same thing.
But if you put, if you put that computer anywhere, do you see the same results?
Maybe. If y'all not saying that they was who they was, then y'all saying they got lucky.
Okay.
Y'all just saying it was the smartest people that got the computer.
Yeah. And he literally talks about this aggression we have towards people who are lucky. Like, you don't want, if someone said, oh, Hero, you made it, and you're like, oh, Hero, you made it to NFL, you're lucky. I would look at that person and be like, man, I'm going to punch your teeth in. Like, you wasn't with me in the gym. But
I mean, you still got to put the work in.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, so like, exactly. It's the same thing I tell my salespeople, like, you still got to put the work in. Like, but sometimes your biggest sale ain't come from nobody you ever saw, talked to, met, or anything. But you're not going to be sitting in here and it happen, or you're not just going to be sitting there and it happen. You got to be putting in the activity and, you know.
But you said probability is luck, but so you consider fucking Bronny like, because he got more probability of doing stuff, and I wouldn't say it's luck.
What you mean?
Cause he already fucking he was born into some shit.
But that's for anybody genetic stuff.
Yeah, the genetics.
Like, because you know too many cold ass people like in sports wise that ain't made it, and it's because they didn't have the eyes on them.
Yeah, but that's
okay.
Not...
I think I agree with you, Black, here to a certain extent, but. But this negative connotation that we have, this thing I have in my chest right now that makes me want to say it's not luck. It had to be something else. It has to be something.
Well, it's a lot of work. I don't call it luck when people work. When they work and they get what they deserve.
But then what do you call it? So what do you call it when someone works and they don't get it, what they want?
It's a lot of life. That's working and not getting it. Right. That's
luck. That's the negative.
That's just life.
That's the luck of the draw.
Hey, look. No, what's motherfucking Forrest Gump saying? When Forrest Gump was running, he stepped in the shit. Dude was like, hey, you got shit on your shoes. He like, it happens. He like, what? Shit? He like, sometimes. That's
like, nah, but I think life happened to everybody.
Yeah.
So I want to say, like, I'm not saying people that put in the work and the shit not happening, not having life happen to them too, but sometimes it is like right place, right time. Called the right person. Like,
it's most of the time right place, right time, and who you know. It's never really like
you call it luck, you call it a blessing, you call it it's something.
You call it what you want to call it.
But it ain't just because I work.
Yeah, I'm just calling it. It's just life.
Okay. Because
like you know how a motherfucker quiet as fuck but smart as shit, and I come up with all these ideas. Yeah. They just mind whisper to somebody else. Yeah. And then that person just loud as fuck with it, man. That's all they hear.
It don't matter how hard I work, I ain't gonna never be LeBron James. I could work until man. And he's just blessed by God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. You don't think that you could have as a kid
No.
I'm gonna be 6 foot
No, whatever, no, whatever no, scenario you about to make up in your mind. No,
Jordan was who he was before.
Black. You can't. Scientists.
You know what the next hardest Michael Jordan was? He was Kobe Bryant. He still wasn't Mike.
He was That's better. What
the next hardest working Michael Jordan became.
Yeah, he was better. Kobe.
Stop
it, Black. What are you
and
doing?
And I'm the biggest Kobe guy out there. Yeah. We're not Stop doing it. But it don't matter how hard I work. I ain't going to be LeBron. He's 6'8", whatever. So you can't
I'm not saying being LeBron. I'm just saying if you follow the mood of it, the things that he did, would you just be great?
No. There's no guarantee. You're not 6 foot
nothing.
There's no guarantee.
How tall are you, Jeremiah? Now, ain't no guarantees of shit.
I ain't 6 feet, none.
You see that other nigga that was that supposedly better than LeBron? I was on his podcast talking to myself. I was better than them niggas. I was cooking them. I think his name was Cook, wasn't it?
What you talking about?
That nigga that was hooping with LeBron and Melo and the AAU shit, he was talking about. I was better than them.
I didn't know who you talking about.
He was on cam and them shit. I think his name was Cook. He was a good basketball player, but he was like, yeah, but I was doing other stuff. Like, but that was on you.
Like, even shit, even Melo career, man. If the Pistons had to draft him instead of the Nuggets, it might have went a whole way different.
Or if he didn't focus on the money, right?
That ain't got shit to do with him.
Yeah.
What, focusing on the money? You're talking about focusing on the money after he got...
I'm talking about the draft. That ain't had nothing to do with him.
Oh, the draft ain't had nothing to do with what happens after you got your
like
free
agent. Like the Bears, man. We got the number one pick. We just got blessed, finally.
And we about to learn about our risk management. Real quick.
I don't need nothing of that.
Hey, who the fuck the Bears about to pick?
We about to learn about that real quick. Let's talk a little bit about... it's never enough. Let's talk about getting enough, right? One thing that we're talking a little bit about money and what is it. But the interesting fact that they brought up was, and I think this could kind of scale up to siblings. If someone in your family is well off, the chances of someone else in your family also being well off is probably true. And if you ask them, they'll say that this wasn't luck related. What do you think that is? Is it apropos of anything? Do you think money has a core money? Go ahead.
I think that's the nature versus nurture debate. I think when he said that, he was like, if you got a 6 foot rich male, he's like, I guarantee you, I find a set of brothers that'll feel the exact same way. I'm raised the same. We look the same. We in the same house. Why can't my situation be the same as his? And that's just me being able to be around it and see it. Yeah. But yeah.
But that go to work. They go to work again. All right. Because it ain't like he just came up on that shit. You gotta have that effort.
All right. And then we talk a little bit about luck versus real, which I think luck is real. Yeah. We can confirm that luck is real. Like, it's a stat in games now. Like, it's literally a stat in games. Like, so you gotta have a little faith.
One of my best friends scratch off three straight scratch offs when he went right back in about the same one they all won. That'll never happen for me.
Well, wait. Yeah. You saying if you buy six scratch offs, you one of them won't be a winner?
No, he won three straight. Like came out, went back in, bought another one, came out, went back in, bought. I've never seen that in my life. I've been around a lot of gamblers. Yes. Never in my life, and he don't just went in casually like. I didn't see him do a lot of.
Yeah. So what annoys me about the scratch off is that can happen a lot. But what you winning is another scratch off. You ain't winning fucking.
Nah, he just went and bought a more expensive one with the same money.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. He was winning some good shit, but I've done it and I ain't winning shit but the dollar I paid for the scratch off. So all I'm doing is buying another fucking scratch off and then I'm like, all right, fuck this. And then that's when I tried to buy a bit more expensive one and lost. You know how you go to a casino and you winning some shit?
Yeah.
And you like, fuck it, I'm about to play more. Niggas don't never know how to just leave when they come on.
Everybody who's mind like that, I immediately say to myself, yo, pull. Not if you are bad at making that decision on when to leave the table when you up, it lets me also know that your pullout game is also very weak. Because for some strange reason, that shit is such a defeatist purpose. Like, it just defeats the purpose. In my mind, I have a set number of what I need to win at this table to leave. And I have a set number of what I lose. Yeah. And once I hit one of those two extremes, my night's over. I don't care if I hit that shit in the first 10 minutes or the last 10 minutes before it closes.
What happens that makes gamblers do it is because they'll be on a machine, especially the slots. You'll be on the slot machine and you fucking going crazy and you lose everything. You get up, somebody sit down, then hit the jackpot. You like,
yeah, I press like,
if I only play one more time.
You know, okay, are you fighting someone? But that's the trap, right? If you sitting there hitting that button for 8 hours and then you leave to go take a piss break, you come back, somebody hit that shit right after you and they win, you going to jail. Cause I'm not letting you leave. Like, you going to jail, I'm not letting you leave. Nah, so I get that. That psychology, I get that. Like, that's the thing.
And a casino work in the favor of the people that's there the most, or the people that make that, you know, spends the most. Like, my mother's like a diamond.
Yeah.
Whatever you call the diamond members, right?
Yeah.
When she sticks her card in, she got free money, she got free gifts, she got fucking, she gonna play for free for a while, then she's gonna win. But I'm gonna stick my little fucking regular ass card in there, and I ain't gonna win a motherfucking thing. I ain't getting the shit for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get up like, all right, go ahead, mom. She go down $1,000. I'm like, ain't this a bit?
Rich investors with bad risk. This also introduced something into chapter that I think is a little bit of white collar crime. The fact that, you know, it's part of the business in to take risk, unnecessary risk, and how people take risk with other people's money because they don't feel the effect of that.
Yeah.
There was a line somewhere in here where he talked about poverty. I think in chapter 3, poverty doesn't, when you're in poverty, it doesn't make you feel pain. So I thought that was super interesting for sure. But rich investors are okay with taking bad risk because that makes them lucky. So a rich investor who takes a lot of risk, who still wins, he'll attribute that to luck.
What happens if they don't take any risk?
Man, I always say...
Go ahead.
I always say to myself that when I first started out buying stocks, it took me a long time to understand that volume control, volume max and peaks play a big factor into why stocks sell at high or low rates. If there's more than enough for everybody, it's not going to sell. It's not going to sell at its peak. If there's a scarcity, it's going to sell its peak. And when I was doing my, when I first did my first
that's
stock option.
That's basic economics, ain't it?
No, not, it is. But like, you don't feel that until you're in the in the rush. And then you see yourself, oh, I bought 100 of the stocks and there's only a volume of 300,000 with this, which is nothing. You ain't going to see no pop in your investment because we're already at the top. It's on the way down now where people are going to try and find their exit strategy. So when you talk about risk, I think risk should never be that. Calculated risk isn't risky to me. If I know I'm going to the casino, this money I've set aside was for me to have fun with. This was a calculated risk. I've decided to spend this money in order to earn some type of pleasure. If I get something out of it, then that's just sheer luck to me. Like, hey, that's just the luck of the draw. But also, I understand, like, in a three-deck rotation for blackjack, I know my number counts. So if I got two tens, I'm doubling down. And if we're on count four, I'm doubling down. And if I'm on count six, I'll split. You never split on tens, people. Never split on tens. Double down. So, like, it's calculated risk. And that's the part that I just... Do people take the calculation of them probably getting caught, them probably taking the L, them probably not winning? Do you have to make that leap of faith in order for you to accomplish anything great? That's the question. Do you have to risk something in order to gain something more?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel unless you ask an area where that you good in life, like you like, all right, cool, I'm right here and this is where I'm okay being. But to stay there, you gotta do something because it, only way to stay there and not go down is if you just die. Like, because once you fulfill any other needs after that, you're going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to take risk in life.
I mean, maybe you're looking for another word, but it's a risk. Yeah. Like any investment, like I don't care if you got it. I don't care if it's play money or not. Like if you lose it, you lost it.
Like at a certain extent, we don't really have play money unless you have.
Yeah, I ain't got that.
Those type of, you know, that type of lifestyle. So everybody that's poor and gambling, it ain't play money. It's just you risking your fucking money so that you can do other shit with.
Yeah.
I could have took that 200 and did something smart.
Oh God, like I could have just fucking put that in the CD or something. But nah, I'm gonna go ahead and go to the casino and try to get it real fast. Right.
It's still a
risk. Losing.
Yeah, should have been in my 401k.
Or if you just save it, like right, if you just put it up to the side and then you get another 200 in 2 weeks, then now you got 400, and that's a month. You getting 400 extra a month. That's over 4,000 a year. Without investing it or doing nothing like that. But black people ain't like, fuck that. Now they do that for a year. Now I got 4,000 to go to a casino with. I ain't going to a casino in Chicago. I'm going to Vegas.
Mm. All right, let's push. Chapter 3. Chapter 3, Never Enough. This is a chapter about greed. I want to talk about, I didn't know this, and you guys correct me if I heard this wrong, but before the Ponzi scheme became known as a scheme, as we know it, it was actually a legitimate business, but it ended up being greed that then pushed it past its integrity, and it then attributed its language. So that's fascinating to me that it was actually a legit business up until the indictment of it. But then it also talks a little bit about the two dudes that were investing, the two Indian dudes that were investing, and they got greedy and got caught.
Insider trading,
right?
I think when you get so rich, though, I don't think it was about the money, though.
What is it, though? Okay, so, and this is a problem that we don't have yet. Like, I don't have $100 million and said, but what if I had $200 million?
What is there with money that you can't already get that you got for, I got $5 billion. I need another $100 million.
I remember being handed my first game check ever and not really being able to mentally, I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And I even remember when I deposited to my because I was a kid. My whole entire life, I ain't never had more than $300 in my bank account. Then one day I deposit this money, they immediately decline it and call me like, hey, we think your account's been compromised. I'm like, oh, no, that's me.
If the compromising is getting more money, let them begin. Just open the account and let it happen. That's what I'm like, let it happen.
So, like,
I feel active.
Yeah, don't ask me when more money come in. Talk to me when that shit is gone. When I'm paying bills, like, no, I didn't do that. Give me that money back.
No, give me that back. The thing that bothers me, though, is like, what makes you want more? Like, why come this internal factor of having enough isn't something wired into people? Like, is greed, I think, is truly a fascinating sin. Because if it drives you to want something you don't need, that's wild to me. That's what
a fear comes in. Because a lot of rich people don't have to work no more, but they worried about that money just somehow miraculously disappearing. So then now they gotta fucking, some motherfuckers be like, you know how you get those books that tell you like, I can go back broke and I'll be okay with it because I'll make it back. But a lot of rich people ain't thinking that way. Like, oh, no, I ain't never trying to go. I ain't never trying to go back, bro, I might not ever recover.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna keep working. So I'm like, fucking, this is for the kids at this point.
No, absolutely. I think like, especially at least for the black community, millennials and Gen Xers are experiencing a phase of our lives where we have to make like our parents don't have it. Our guardians, they just don't have it. And we have to set them up. We have to put them in a living position. So much so, I shipped my parents back to Africa. I'm like, if y'all gonna live off of our dime, y'all gonna do it off of free money and established money. Granted, most people who come from their origin countries go to different countries to work, then want to return back home. But yeah. I don't know if I would have the mental capacity to handle having to take care of parents in America versus taking care of them in Nigeria, where
I feel like it's best for any black person if they can afford to go over there and become a citizen 100%. To do so.
I've been saying it for the longest. Find a
yeah,
way.
I can't wait to take the fuck up. My mother be like, "Yeah, you really on it, boy? I'm not joking. I'm gone. It's like come my baby on. Graduate. I'll probably fucking rent this house out. I don't need 5 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms. I need a big kitchen, a big dining room, and some closets. That in a 2-bedroom and a big ass garage and barn. That's no, it
for sure. Because I'm absolutely gonna be outside. Like when the state of the buying a house in the U.S. is. It would be cheaper for you to buy land and build a house on top of that land before buying a house. That's crazy. So like yeah. You got
to
think.
I want to have enough land to build a hidden house because they gonna come through and raise your taxes when they see how big your house is on the land. Bitch, I already paid for the land. Don't raise my taxes.
Yeah, that is true.
You see, Boosie got a community. You seen that shit?
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that.
His tax is about to skyrocket. Got fucking 7 houses on that land.
So then the question then becomes, what does I want to ask you guys? What is it to me to have enough? I'll start off by saying I had this belief that I thought this back when I was in the league. So this number has drastically changed. But after like working in the pharmaceutical industry for 1 year and seeing how the insurance companies make money off of these poor souls, my strategy completely changed.
Like Jeremiah, like, shh.
Hey, chill.
yo. I promise you, $175,000 is all I would ever need a year to like walk really. I've made more than that, but like that's all I would ever need because like they were trying to sign. Hey, we need to move you up. We need to promote you. It's been 6 months. We got to promote you. We got to promote. I'm like, I'm good. I'm tired. I don't want to sell my soul. Just leave me alone. I just want to work with my patients. I just want to make sure they have quality care. Quit trying to move me up in the ladder tree. And they really didn't like understand why I was so against wanting to leave the front lines and work with my patients. And I was like, because I had enough. I had enough. But you know, things change. You know, I might hit a situation where. You know, 2 kids down the line, 2 houses. Okay, now we need some more.
175, not enough.
Yeah, 175, not enough. It really isn't.
So it's like, I need at least two. I need these 2. 225 is okay with me, and I'm
225.
Yeah.
You giving why?
It's not enough.
Nah.
What is enough?
Like, I would be able to put up like so with 225. I would be able to put up about. 67. I probably had to put up a whole damn near 100 a year.
All right. So we talking realities, or we talking about what?
I'm talking about what's gonna be done with me.
So realities. Back to what Hero was talking about was you sending your parents back to Africa to take care of your parents. Mm-hmm. Understanding that I have 3 kids with. A wife and a mother-in-law and parents of my own, that ain't enough.
Mm. Well, in Africa it would be.
Yeah.
Because how much you spending a month
in Africa? They're not going to Africa.
They're not going to Africa. Because
you can't, like, but you got to just take them on a random trip.
We talking realities, or we talking about what I want to happen.
Take them on a random trip out there and see how they like it. They're going to be like, damn, I might want to stay.
They ain't going to Africa.
Yeah.
So...
But for me, I'm not really worried about my parents so much, or whoever I'm with parents, unless that's like they concern, because they ask you to become with us. But I'm talking about my future when I retire. Mm-hmm. But if also with 200 something, I can get me some land and then just build me a little property behind my house that they can live in.
I haven't found the number yet.
You haven't found the number.
I haven't found the number yet.
Well, you in Georgia, you better buy you some land and get you a little build your boosting community.
I'm still contemplating on what this number gonna be.
Yeah.
But I know it's I know it's over net in a million a year. I know that.
Yeah. See, I don't need that much.
Man. Yeah, I don't need a million. Somebody in the chat said ship them off, JB. Somebody said ship them off.
Because when you're living off my dime, you don't get to choose too much.
They're going to show up right back at my doorstep. Yeah.
Somehow they're going to find their way back.
Then they can stay with you.
Oh, we thought this was just a vacation. We came back.
So I do know what it's going to look like. I just don't know what it's going to cost yet.
If it costs a million, I'll say this now, and maybe this is a clip.
So again, Hero, all of this happening at the same time. My parents, my mother-in-law, mm-hmm. my kids at college. This all happened at the same time. How much money do you think you need? Also, why inflation is going this way. How much money do you really think you need? Like, you don't really know. You know what you want it to look like, but like, you don't really know.
Yeah, I guess that's the kind of downfall of being having a loaded plate and versus having stuff like in the fridge, like going out to eat versus eating at home. Like you don't know what the prices are outside, but you know what it costs to get the groceries in your house right now. And that's why they always say, "Do you got McDonald's money?" And I'd be like, "Nah, probably don't." 'Cause Big Macs cost $7 right now. That's crazy.
We gonna get that.
Sure. Like if it's up to me. Like I said this the other day. I was in an interview with one of my clients, and they were asking me like, "Hey, you know, here we heard that you're thinking about moving, changing positions." And I told them like, "Yeah." They're like, "Oh, why don't you come out to Philly?" And I was just like, "Yeah, that sounds great. The money would be great, but like, then I got to start over in Philly. It's the quality of my life at that point, like." Rebuilding in Philly versus rebuilding in places I know and have ground. It's just like sometimes you want to go where people know your name. But also, ooh, okay. And this
you trying to go to the Cheers bar?
Yeah, you gonna be there, Black? I'll be there. Yeah, why not?
Sometimes you want to go.
Another thing that people that this chapter really shout out to me that screamed out the comparisons issue. People comparing themselves to other people is your downfall. And it sucks that this is actually something that's true, because one look at social media and it's very quickly people become aggrandized or obsessed. These parasocial connections we've made with people on the internet and thinking that their life is really up when they are living the most basic life. I know people who have a Cybertruck right now in an apartment complex. They can't even charge the damn truck. And they have a Cybertruck. They live in an apartment complex.
Yeah, I've been seeing the posts about that. I feel like I'm not sure what type of charge or situation they have, but I fuck with them living in an apartment and having a Cybertruck if they ain't got no kids. They can do what they want, especially if it's like a condo. Like, hire a Cybertruck wherever you want to have it. I don't give a fuck about that kind of stuff. I would care if you were living in the projects with a. No, matter of fact, I would love it if you lived in a project with a Cybertruck. Because I know you, if you're on low income and you fucking get an entrepreneur making 200 something thousand, live where the fuck you want to live off this Section 8 that you got. You got Section 8, but you net 200,000 because you got your entrepreneur. I know motherfucking at least 10 people who's making a lot of money with Link card. I'm like, well, how the fuck you got a link with all this money? And you make all this money. You drive in a Benz or something like that, but stop at the store, I got the
late. Hey, Black, first and foremost, Black is not formally officiated with this channel. He does not have, do not contact us looking to get his information. I do not know.
Hit me up. I'll introduce you to the rich people that got late. Because they're entrepreneurs.
Man. That's crazy. Another thing that, JB, anything you want to bring on about comparison factors?
No, this is one of my favorite quotes. Comparison is the thief of joy. But, you know.
Another thing he puts in here, he doesn't talk about this, but I do want to ask this question. Your title is not, this was something that Coach Prime said last week that showed up in this book. Your title is not who you are, it's just where you are. And this all unfolds and encompasses with the two people who took insider trading, and they lost their titles and everything, but you know, they thought that their titles really represented who they were. And then they went to jail and they got out and they realized, oh, that title didn't save you. It didn't help you. Also, man, how dumb is your friend to buy it right there on the spot? You gotta.
Because he told him to.
You gotta have a delay.
You know, there's a understand, like, there's a certain segment of people here that don't think that they're gonna get caught doing shit. So,
yeah. I don't think they had the complexion for the flexion. So I don't know.
He said, fuck it, I'm doing it.
Chapter four. This one was kind of short, but compounding.
You can put this one with five.
Yeah, yeah. Four and five together. Compounding. Wait, no, it says.
Compounding.
Compounding, and then compound.
Say it real fast three times.
No, stop it. And then chapter five is get wealthy and staying wealthy. Chapter four was just talking about like compounding interest and the power of it, and the time it takes. A lot of people will talk about how great of an investor Warren Buffett is, but no one will ever talk about the time strategy. And that if you really acknowledge that, if he started investing when the average American started investing, no one would know who he is. In fact, that if you compared him with other people from 30 years to the 60-year mark, there are people who are better investors than him technically per capita without the first 30 years of his life. It's just because of how much time he put. And that's truly the...
If you take off a portion of anybody's progress, you can find people that got better progress.
But we're talking more so about his exponential growth, which came...
He started at goddamn nine.
Yeah, started at 9 years old. Like, you know, and, you know, I kind of see this because I'm a dividend investor. I have two stock portfolios. I have a dividend portfolio and I have a regular stock portfolio. And the dividend portfolio, year over year, outperforms anything that the stock market can put out. And it's because of the compounding interest. Like, the goal there was to get to $100,000 invested in dividends and just have it reinvesting in itself. And to one day be able to just live off of my dividend residuals and still have enough to put away to keep the compounding interest on a positive influx. I started that at 30. 5 years into it now, that money now is the money that I'm using to buy investment properties and trying to think of the strategy of what's going to happen if these rates don't drop. If we want to sell houses or property, like, what's the next step?
They're gonna drop.
I don't see it.
I hope they fucking drop.
I don't see it.
I don't want to buy no.
Why don't they drop?
I'm not getting a farm.
Inflation is still increasing, and the job market number minus the people who work on farms didn't increase by 0.04. That's usually the increase before the summer starts. We're already into spring. Like, we don't have those rates yet.
Inflation had went down just
it went like, down, but it's already back up.
This is not a political podcast.
All right, cool.
But there's an election coming up, right? And there's gonna be a certain someone who I don't see nobody that's gonna beat this certain someone. And things gonna happen, like.
It not being a political podcast, mm-hmm. You think that something's better gonna happen when this other someone gets in?
No, I'm not saying that something better gonna happen.
Oh, okay, man.
I'm saying that he do understand certain things better than other people.
I think you're confused. I don't think he understands almost any damn thing, but. Because of election time, a lot of stuff is going to go up just off the strength because it's election time. And everybody with little power is flexing their power right about now. So you have right now, even in Chicago, where you have the construction, what I do, where projects are not even being started or they're being delayed until after the votes go in to sway.
But I'm just saying, all of this stuff go into play together when a certain party is in office and the race is going to change. It's for a certain segment of people. Like, it's going to happen. Like, it's still going to happen. Like, I'm not even talking about black people. I'm just talking about just people in general. Like, if people can't afford to do shit, then something has to happen.
I'll say this, you know.
With the party that you're in at currently, the people that you're talking about that it benefits are the poor people.
I'll say to Black's point, we've been in this book club for 3 years. I started my LLC, and it's one of those tragic situations where I see a mother who's making $62,000 a year, two kids, and she owed $200 this year. And after I did all my write-offs, not only did it cover my losses, I didn't pay myself last year, a salary. And I walked away with money from the government because of the investments I made into the economy.
Yeah, me too. How much did you make though? How much did your LLC make?
For shits and giggles, just randomly. Don't just say
just like, random.
Somewhere between 80,000 and 20,000.
Yeah,
that's my point. Mm-hmm. What you gonna do with that? Mm-hmm. That's my point.
Yeah,
it's not about like granted, like you do got the money making, but you also got that issue going on too, which is like part of the reason why the cars was 100% write offs.
Yeah,
but not anymore.
Yeah,
for what cars are not 100% off anymore, like write offs anymore for your businesses.
If it weighs over a certain pound, it's not 100% write off. It's not.
What's the poundage?
I forgot.
Because my boy
it's got to be a large SUV. But
it's got to be like a 6-ton vehicle.
But it just ended.
But my boy just got his write off for his pickup, for his Lance.
But it's not 100%. I got an accountant that told me this, when she told me when I had to do it by and I didn't, it's not 100% write off no more.
I'm not petty like that. But I'll show you later what he got on his
I'm just saying that it's not 100% write-off no more. If he got it by a certain point, then it was, but it's not no more.
Yeah.
But why? But you think it should be?
It depends.
Yeah. If you spend in an 8-hour day, you spend 6 hours in your truck, or spend 6 hours actively with your truck to do your work. And to know that I can write off my scrubs, I can write off my gloves, I can write off my hair caps for surgery. Why can't I do that?
You can write off as much as you want to write off. But what percentage do you want to get back from it? Everything that you spent into it, that you put into yourself?
Again, it depends.
No, I'm just throwing out that random number that you want to get back.
If somebody else doing it, then hell yeah.
Yeah, so... what percentage? Yeah, I'm just saying, like, what percentage?
What do you mean?
I see what Black is saying, because when do you stop? Do we stop giving away 100%?
Somebody else stop. Yeah.
No.
Look, I was in Afghanistan, right? When Obama came into office, he changed shit with the military. But at first, the first what, few years of his presidency, nothing was changed, but the shit that's already in place gonna ride into most presidents' term. Right. First term. Most of everything gonna ride into your term. So fucking, while we were over there, before we came back, they ended how much that we could just randomly spend. We were in Afghanistan getting Oakleys, like they were fucking $2 glasses at the gas station. Motherfuckers were in combat zones getting TVs flown in.
An airdrop? Y'all had an airdrop for some TVs.
They were just fucking, bro, they had big-ass TVs on a base that was fucking 2 miles from the Taliban's base. It was 2 miles from the Taliban's base. We were only there for combat. We had a big-ass barbecue with steaks, lobster, and all type of crazy shit just because you were able to order so much stuff in the, under those military contracts with Bush. Mm-hmm. And it was taking us into the hole because of certain people do that type of stuff. And I understood when they cut that shit, motherfuckers was mad. I was salty. I wasn't about to get this TV. I told my supply dude to order me. But I was like, man, what the fuck? How am I going to get that TV back to America anyway? You know what I mean? What was that? 60, 70 inches and out there in Afghanistan in the little ass tents.
Yeah, that's tents. That's like, great. Hey, that's the Tesla. That's the Tesla. Hey, that's the Tesla in the parking in the apartment complex. We fucks with it.
That's why. That is why all these people got Teslas though. Yeah. They was one of the 100% write-offs.
Yeah.
But also they had it with the Uber contract where you get a Tesla and they pay it through Uber. So and Tesla had those cutbacks. Well, they were just giving Teslas away this past year.
Giving Teslas away. Because they knew that they were about to, they just laid off 10% of their population, but we can definitely get into that. It's something about Chapter 5, getting wealthy versus staying wealthy. And having the ability to see both sides of the coin, and I'm speaking from a sense of privilege and a little bit of bias here. I had to ask the question, is being broke really that bad? Like,
no.
If
I didn't have a kid, I would be so okay with being broke, bro. I say this all the time.
Yeah. Said,
If you don't have anyone depending on you, being broke is cool. If you only get dependent on you, that's so fucking okay.
You can live life the happiest. You see all these people going over, out of town all the time.
But is it what do you consider? What are we talking about from the broke perspective, though? Because there is a certain level that it, yeah, that shit that bad.
Homeless people are happier than us. A lot of them.
Shut up, bud.
A lot of homeless people are happier.
Don't go back to his first question of perception is reality.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they got movies about the rich person that got broke and then got happier when they got broke. Yeah. Right. Like, they got movies about that.
A lot of stress that's on your back when you have money and you have to take care of a lot of stuff, it's going to be gone. Once you lose it all, because now you ain't got that responsibility.
Like, that's why he said Bernie Madoff was like, don't get too attached to nothing. Like, I don't want my reputation back. But the dude in the book couldn't believe that he was saying that he don't want his reputation back. But maybe he don't. Like, maybe he's sick of that shit.
Remember,
like,
Eli sold all his shit and lived in that little ass house.
Everybody and their mother was prepared to tell me, bro, You need to go back to the league. You need to go back to the league. I didn't want that life no more. That shit was hard. Having your life be ran for you for 18 hours a day for 6 months out of the year, and then an additional 4 months out of the year because you have to train to get back up to that level.
And then you got to fucking make sure that you're available, because if you're not, you don't get paid.
It's the same thing he said in the never enough section, though. Like, like, it depends on where you, like, what you find is good enough for you.
So if you ever get a chance, like both of y'all, I know y'all probably did stuff for homeless people. Pick some of them out and talk to them, because some of them chose that life.
I think choose is hard. I think circumstances.
No, they chose to do it.
It's motherfuckers
out there with more money than
people do actually choose to, like.
It's people out there with more money than
homeless. You guys hear a choice. But, like, if you're presented with two ultimatums, you're going to have to pick the lesser of two evils or the less impactful to you. So, like, if the alternative is you have to derobe yourself, go cold turkey without your drugs, and not have any assistance or support, then that is your best option.
You're speaking of people that are homeless in different type of situations. I'm talking about people that just chose that life because that made them happy. I'm talking about they choose it for freedom. For them, it's freedom of everything.
It's people that want to go off the grid for real. They're going off the grid.
It's a lot of people
They're not really going to like have this immaculate life. They're going to be away from all this shit.
Yeah, just be happy.
Trying to figure out what happiness means.
So it's motherfuckers out there that have income. That's what I'm saying. They have income. They have money. And they just living like that because they want to. Like, it's veterans that do it, and they would shower, and they would get a room, shower like that. But other than that, they just living their life. They get to go and do what they want as they please.
I mean, Kanye said that's what he did. Like, he ain't bought a house, and he just living out a backpack, and he live.
But he's able to rent all the stadiums and yeah, the rules. Yeah, yeah. Just yeah. Like fucking what's that? Elon was that Elon who gave up all the shit and moved into a little house?
Yeah, that was Elon.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, but
he didn't have no income.
Yeah, but when you got that type of money put up, like you can do that type of stuff. But it's some like veterans that do it, and there's some homeless people that make between $200 and $500 a day just begging. Now you got that tax free money that you just cashing the fuck out on, mm-hmm. And then if some of the motherfuckers got LLCs and they fucking pay taxes. That like there is some homeless people that really live that life, especially in LA. But it's a lot of them in Chicago too.
Somebody really live that life.
Yeah, they it's a different type of freedom. I would be okay being free.
But I would say it do go back to that
perception. Yeah, I'm an outside person.
Like when you brought up the prostitute versus the working in the sweatshop thing. It's the same deal. But I mean it depends on how you look at life and look at yourself. Yeah. Is being broke that bad? It depends.
Depending on how you look at life.
It depends.
Cause you can be happy in those $2 Walmart shoes, well $10 now with inflation.
I definitely like see people that don't that seem like they ain't got it up. They be happy as hell.
They don't give a damn about what nobody think about them.
You be happy as hell.
You know who that? Like some of that. So I know it's a little off, but people with Down syndrome that are active, like they're able to take care of themselves. Those are some of the happiest people in the world. Hmm. If you've never gonna really see any of them upset or sad or nothing like that, they always happy.
They are happy to just be able to contribute to the society and feel like they play a role and
have jobs and shit like
you
that.
You ever just come across that like happy ass person that's just happy as hell? You be like,
it's always disturbing to me whenever I see if any of my nurses are smiling at work. I know either they put their 2 weeks notice in. Or they about to start their vacation. Like, I just know. I'm like, damn, we lost one? Oh, no, she going on vacation next week. Okay.
But that's me, though. I'm always happy, but I know I got to take care of my daughter. If I ain't have her, boy, I wouldn't have this house. I would be trying to get fucking low income somewhere. Nah, I probably would have just left. I ain't going to lie. I'd have been gone.
I think if you experienced it, Africa.
Living off this disability,
yeah, you
would have
probably
been gone.
Yeah, you probably just dipped off to Africa. That's a great point. Let's push.